Broadcasting to New York City, Los Angeles, Chicago, Sydney, London, and around the world, this is Trumpet Radio Live.
Thanks for joining us on this Wednesday edition of Trumpet Radio Live. A lot to talk about on today's program. Turns out Iran is not the friend of the United States, apparently, which was news to me, so some information about that. Also, Canada, they've just approved prescription heroin. We'll have the details. Other stories, very interesting ones, including a college roommate that kind of takes the cake as far as being crazy goes. We'll have details about that and a lot more coming up on this edition of Trumpet Radio Live.
This is Trumpet Radio Live.
Thanks for joining us on this edition of Trumpet Radio Live. It's Wednesday. It's the middle of the week, and we're A-OK. We're doing all right.
That's right.
A lot going on. Lots of exciting things to talk about on this edition of Trumpet Radio Live. And there's also, I want to mention as we start, there's a concert coming up here at Armstrong Auditorium Thursday evening. Step Crew, they will be performing. All the details, all the pertinent information is at armstrongauditorium.org. So you can go there and check all that out. And if you listen to Music for Life this week, the host Ryan Malone had a nice interview with them and talked to them. So if you're in the area, of course, we know we have a lot of listeners online at kpcg.fm around the world. You can catch a flight. You got a couple days. Come and I don't know. I think there might be a few tickets left. I know it's selling quick. But you can find more information there at armstrongauditorium.org. So that'll be fun.
It's really going to be worth it. If you make that flight, definitely you'll get a show for sure. I was able to snag a couple tickets in the second row, so I'm pretty excited.
You'll be right there.
Oh, yeah.
And it's going to be a film, too. They're making a DVD of their, their concert, so it'll be kind of an exciting evening here at Armstrong Auditorium. We're broadcasting to you from the campus of Armstrong College. And I'm Dwight Falk, by the way. This is Grant Turgeon. Greetings.
Now they know who we are.
Now, fine. Who are these guys? We have to identify ourselves. We were talking yesterday, too, about the five best airlines. So if you're in the U.S. and you need to catch a flight, we gave you the five best.
What was it? Virgin America was the top one?
Virgin America.
There you go.
Top one. That's what they say anyway. One of the headlines today on CNN, their big headline is, it's so funny. It's a picture of Donald Trump playing golf, and it says, "Is he healthy?" Question mark.
Oh, no.
They could have just called the headline, should be, "Never mind the fainting lady."
They always just try to divert attention.
Yeah, what difference? I mean, yeah, if he's not healthy, they should definitely look at that. But what about the lady that faints all the time? What, is she okay?
It's just a childish insult, like, you're unhealthy. No, you're unhealthy.
I know. I mean, put yourself in that situation. You're just a person going about your business, and you see two people, and one of them collapses. Would you run and help them, or would you be like, well, how about this guy over here? You'd probably go over and check on the fainting woman.
Yeah, no need to bring someone else into this mess.
Is she okay? Never mind her. How are you?
Are you about to faint?
I think I'm okay. So anyway, those are some of the interesting headlines that are going on today on CNN and other places. They try to divert attention away from some of the major issues. Stephen Fleury talks about that in the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. We'll preview that here in a little bit. But it's just amazing how the media just very quickly is like, never mind this. How about that over there?
What are they trying to do? Critique his golf swing? Or did he pull a muscle when he swung or something?
I don't know.
How can they even equate those two things?
Yeah, and it wasn't the best picture to grab either because he looked fairly healthy. He's playing golf. They should have done a little better research and found something where he didn't look so good.
I know.
Very interesting. This is a headline from CSN News today. Iran, they have a new ship that they unveiled yesterday. Iran's Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps Navy has a message for the U.S. Navy, and this is the message on their ship, they wrote. Go to the Bay of Pigs. The Persian Gulf is our home. They put a banner on their ship saying that. I'm sure they meant it kindly, though.
Right. I mean, they obviously, they're our best friends. Yeah. So they just said, here's some more water for the both of us.
Paid for it with U.S. tax dollars, no doubt, that banner. This says the banner bearing the words to that effect was draped on the side of a new Iranian-built warship unveiled in the port of Bushehr on Tuesday, at a time when the Pentagon has reported a jump in the number of Iranian provocations in one of the world's most important waterways. So that is a very important waterway. There's a lot of trade that flows through there. Iran is not stupid when it comes to that. They know that if they can control those waterways, they increase their power. So they keep taking shots at us, and now they have a banner telling us to go home. Go back to the Bay of Pigs.
Maybe we should. Maybe we should just concede at this point. We've given them so many things, and nothing's working. They still don't like us.
They do everything to just really stick it in our eye, so to speak, and yet they just continue to capitulate to their will, I guess, and their demands. So
probably the whole world would rather us be there, though, in that body of water to make sure Iran doesn't just cut off the oil or something like that.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, absolutely. Strategic waterways. So there's a lot of quite a few Key of David programs that talk about some of those waterways, and they have maps there that show you the different places and how strategic they are. And yeah, a lot of trade flows through there. I couldn't say that. That's like a tongue twister. Waterways. I got to slow down. Too much coffee.
Death wish coffee.
Yeah, that's right. Not that strong, I don't think. This is a headline from the Washington Post. This one's startling. Canada has just approved prescription heroin. So, I mean, I think probably everybody's pretty aware of what heroin does to a person because there's been a lot of high-profile people, celebrities, musicians that have died from heroin over the years, and you see them deteriorate, you know, in front of your eyes. And that, to me, I'm just like, whoa, get that out of here. But they think that prescription heroin will be a good idea for these junkies that can't kick the habit, that it'd be better that they come in and they get free prescription for it.
Yeah, that message Canada's sending out there is that we just don't have any willpower, so we will actually change laws and procedures so that something like this can actually be legal. This is a life-destroying drug, and yet we're just going to administer it, I guess, try to control it somehow.
Right. Yeah, the Canadian government has quietly approved a new drug regulation that will permit doctors to prescribe pharmaceutical-grade heroin to treat severe addicts who have not responded to more conventional approaches. Even if you think about that sentence, it doesn't make any sense. They're not trying to cure them. They're just keeping them doped up. Like, they don't respond to conventional methods, so we'll just keep them on drugs. Now, I know what they would say, I think. They would say, well, it's better they come here and do it, quote-unquote, safely than, you know, kill somebody or rob somebody for money. And then I understand that, but that's just such a warped perspective. Wouldn't it be better just to get rid of the stuff?
Right.
I mean, what if it was one of your family members, and they're like, well, just bring them in. We'll just keep them high until, I guess, they die because it'll kill them eventually.
Yeah, to simplify the issue, you could just say, we know this person is addicted to heroin, so to fix that, we will give them some heroin. It just doesn't make any sense at all. How about keep them in a facility where no drugs are available and don't let them leave until it's proven that they don't need it?
It's kind of a doctor-assisted suicide, isn't it?
Seems like it.
Because, I mean, they're not going to, how long are they going to live on this? I don't know. It says the move means that Crosstown, which is a trailblazing clinic in Vancouver, beautiful town, by the way, will be able to expand its special heroin maintenance program, in which addicts come in as many as three times a day. So it's like getting your annual meal or your daily meal, I guess, and receive prescribed injections of legally obtained heroin from a nurse for free. Legally obtained, what difference does it make? That, you know, you have all these drug dealers that make all this money and all these foreign, you know, drug runners from Mexico and so forth. Well, how are they getting this stuff? I mean, aren't they buying it from somewhere? They're just keeping the market going. And if you're up there in this area, let's say, and you are on the drugs, wouldn't you want to get into this program? Because it's free.
Right.
I don't have to pay anything.
I can
get my fix for free.
It's better. It's way better. You don't end up, I guess, in a ditch or something like that. I've heard stories of that where people end up, you know, passed out from, I guess, whenever the high ends, and then they're on the street or something like that. Now they can just get their three doses every single day for free, in a nice facility, and I guess that's fine. Why not just keep them there until they're over the drug? I don't understand the logic here. If they could just be kept in a facility, and then once that they are over it, then release them.
Yeah. A lot of times people get into that and they fall back into it, and that's the sad thing. But still, this isn't a solution. You know, there's that picture that went viral last week of those two parents in Ohio, I guess it was, where they were pretty much dying in the front of their car.
They were trying to drive, too.
Yeah.
That was crazy.
With the child in the back. And that, I mean, that just shocked everybody. And that was the point of the police releasing it, trying to get people to wake up. Like, look, this is what you're doing if you're doing this stuff. But then on the other side here, they're saying, well, you know, just give them the prescription. They say the program is the only one of its kind in Canada and the United States, but is similar to the approach taken in 8 European countries. So this is being done other places. What is the dividing line between let's just bring everybody in, get them hooked on it, and we'll just keep pumping them full of it? You know, I mean, at some point people are just going to, I would think, seek out these programs and try to get it for free. And it would just expand the number of people that are taking these drugs. So it's like saying, well, it's okay to be on drugs, just let's make sure the government gives it to you. It's crazy. I mean, what if these are parents or people that need help? They need to get off of this, and they just keep them going. It's crazy to me. I don't understand it.
That whole program removes the stigma from doing drugs as well, because this just makes it legal, and it's not like they have to hide a single thing. And then on top of that, they're saying that it's so supposedly safe. How do they think that a heroin injection 3 times a day is safe? What is the science behind that anyway?
Well, and then what happens if they run out? You know, you get a bunch of people on these programs, and all of a sudden you don't have it for them anymore. You have some angry people coming. I think it's a bad deal all the way around. So Canada has been experimenting with quite a few things. They wanted to just give, I guess, a base income to everybody. I don't know if that ever took off.
Certain couple towns they didn't want to name.
Yeah. And right. Then now this heroin thing, so, wow.
Let's just give in. Give in to every vice and just say that, oh, look, we can't conquer it, so let's just do it.
Yeah, that's exactly what's being said, really. We can't solve it, so just we'll try to regulate it somehow. Amazing. Here's a couple of interesting stories from the Of Course This Is Happening segment. Meet the man who walks people for a living. This is a real thing.
Like with a leash around the neck?
No, not with a leash.
Okay, good.
Unless that's what they're asking for, I guess. They're paying customers, so I guess it depends on what they're interested in. But this is something where it's starting to take off. So, I mean, if you're looking for some extra bucks, you might start this in your community. Chuck McCarthy, he's out there in California. He walks humans for $7 per mile around the streets and park near his home. Pioneering an alternative to dog walking that requires no leash, just an ability to walk, talk, and above all, to listen. The idea initially struck the underemployed actor several months ago as a joke, an imaginary way to make extra cash until it became real. He said, the more I thought about it, the less crazy it seemed. He said he has a homemade t-shirt that he wears that scrawled across it says, "The People Walker, low budget mobile advertising." He says, I've been doing walks almost every single day for the past week, and I'm getting repeat clients, which is what you want. So he's a pretty big guy. They have a picture of him. He's trying to be an actor, and he's not getting a lot of parts, but he's this big guy. And so he just takes people on walks, and they talk to him, and he just walks around. He charges them $7 an hour. And it seems kind of like a really bad idea, but at the same time, it's interesting. People want somebody to talk to. In some cases, they want to feel safe. Like, they don't want to walk through certain parts, and this guy's a really big guy, so I guess they trust him. So I don't know. I mean, you got to give him some credit for thinking up a creative way to make some money.
Yeah, it sounds like in some cases like mobile therapy or a temporary bodyguard, depending on the situation. So I guess whenever you explained it that way, it sounds like there could be some uses for something like that.
It's one of those things where I think there's a real breakdown in society of things that used to be normal, like walking or having somebody to talk to. And so people are missing that. And this guy's actually tapped into it, which is funny. His Facebook flyer advertisement says this, or I guess he puts this up on lampposts as well. It says, need motivation to walk, scared to walk alone at night. Don't like walking alone at all. Don't want people to see you walking alone and just assume you have no friends. Don't like listening to music or podcasts, but can't walk alone in silence? Forced to face thoughts of the unknown future, of your own insignificance in the ever-expanding universe? It's like, whoa, hang on a second. That's a lot of questions.
That's hurtful.
Yeah. So if you're one of those people, he'll take a walk with you at $7 a mile. He says, so many requests have poured in that he's recruited five other walkers to serve different parts of Los Angeles. Commenters on his Facebook page have offered plenty of advice. They said, charge more and scale it up. Figure out what the secret sauce is, personality or being a good listener. Then train your walker bees accordingly. So he's trying to start this whole franchise of walkers.
It sounds like it could explode pretty quickly here, too. I wonder how he employs the walkers. Do they all just keep every bit of the money that they do that they get from those?
Well, so far he said he's not taking anything from them, but obviously if it becomes a business, I suppose he will. But there are instances where actually some parents have said, can you walk my kid to the bus stop and back?
Oh, okay.
So he's actually like a personal bodyguard in a way.
Wow.
So that actually kind of makes sense to me. I'm like, that's pretty inexpensive, I guess, especially if it's not a long distance. But now you got to trust the guy doing it.
Exactly.
I mean, what are this guy's credentials? He's just kind of a scary looking guy, big old beard and just a huge guy. But he's a good listener and he'll walk with you for $7 a mile.
That sounds pretty fun. That's something I might try if I go out to L.A. sometime just to say I did it. There's what are those rickshaws that people,
yeah,
they just have someone on a bicycle ride them through the streets. I've done that a couple times, and that's, obviously I could walk across the street myself, but it's just entertaining to try these new things once in a while.
Yeah, so this guy, he'll probably become, you know, maybe kind of a famous. To where you're like, oh, I'm going to walk with the walker. You know?
Yeah.
And, you know, what'd be interesting about this guy, too, is if he did actually walk with him, he'd have a lot of stories, too, about people he's walked with. He said a lot of times the conversation doesn't get too personal. It's kind of surfaced. But I don't know. I guess it depends on how long you're going to walk. If I was going to do it, I'd say, look, why don't you and me walk by the beach? We'll take a long stroll by the beach here and we'll get some good scenery. I'll tell you about my thoughts. Seven. I don't know. He must have like a way to track the mileage pedometer or something.
Maybe he puts it on his phone. You can do pretty much anything on a phone now, so maybe he does it that way.
Yeah. So anyway, I don't know how you would break it down if it's less than a mile. You know, 3/4 mile. I guess you got to pay.
Hopefully, you can do a little bit of basic math.
Basic math there, like a taxi cab. It's got the thing that keeps running. So anyway, this guy is on to something. So of course that's happening out there in Los Angeles. Who would have ever thought? Paid to walk with people.
Who would have ever thought that most of the stories we talk about would ever be real?
Yeah, it's amazing. Here's one more from this, of course, this is happening segment. You know, a lot of times people go to college, they have roommates and, you know, different personalities and so forth. Well, this one girl, she was going to room with two other girls. And she apparently sent them an email. They didn't respond. And so she got upset. So she sends off this email to them. It goes viral. These people I've never met, by the way. And keep in mind, too, if you think about colleges, in most cases, they're just, if nothing else, they're trying to teach people how to make money, right? So I read this email here, and I think I would never hire this person to do anything because they're crazy. But maybe she'll learn as she goes through school. So she sends this out to her roommates before they've ever met. She says, okay, so I'm not sure why neither of you responded back to my emails, but I don't really care. As long as you both know this and understand that I'm not going to settle for anything less than what I'm going to tell you, what that I'm going to get once I arrive in the dorm. So she needs to work on the English a little. She says, I'll take the top bunk. I do not, in all caps, want the single bunk where it has a desk underneath the top bunk. So don't try to leave me that. I'm also taking one of the white closets. There should be two white closets, and I'm taking one of them. I don't care which one it is. Just know I'm taking one of them. She continues. I want the desk that's near the window. Plain and simple. I don't care about who gets the bottom bunk, but just know that what I stated above is what I'm expecting once I arrive at the dorm. And I won't be in the mood for any arguing or other nonsense because one of you two decided to deliberately disregard this email. If needed, if is capitalized, which I don't understand. If needed be. If needed be. It's like Shakespeare here. I'll turn it into a bigger situation, so don't try me.
That is alarming.
And then she continues. Sorry, but not that sorry for the attitude. I don't like being ignored because that's just rude. But that's what you both decided to do, so I decided to make it clear now on the kind of person I am and what I will and will not take. There was no punctuation in that, by the way. I added the commas.
Wow.
So she can thank me for that.
Skill.
And then she says, finally, so as a final reminder, in case you didn't get it, I am getting the top bunk of the bunk bed with the bed on the bottom. Okay.
That's really hard to decipher there.
I am getting one of the white closets, and I'm getting the desk near the window. That's fair enough to ask, considering that I'm giving up fighting for the top bunk. I thought she wanted the top bunk. I'm confused.
She's negotiating with herself at this point.
Okay.
She's really distraught.
Who is she? She's emailing herself.
I think so. Yeah.
And then a little later on, she wrote back to them and said, I'm also really chill, too. But as you can see from my previous email, I am like a ticking time bomb that sets off when things I don't like happen to me.
When she gets triggered.
That's a real email that somebody sent to two people that they've never met before.
Well, she's not going to get along with those two people because obviously one of them must have leaked it to the public.
Oh, man. I mean, can you imagine that? You're heading off to college and like, I want to change dorm assignments here. This is, yeah, I love how she says, I'm really chill. I'm really chill.
I'm also a ticking time bomb, though.
Yeah. She said, I am like a ticking time bomb that sets off when things I don't like happen to me. I don't know if that totally makes sense with ticking, the way a ticking time bomb works, but anyway.
That sets off.
Yeah. It starts with, I don't, anyway. Too much to dissect there. But so that's, of course, that email was sent out to these girls. And I just thought, wow, grammar is really poor for one. So I don't know how she got into college. Maybe when she got mad, she couldn't figure out how to use the grammar. But in any event, they're supposed to learn how to get along with people, right? And like in a workplace environment. Can you imagine hiring this person? Just outrageous.
Yeah. Well, they are making different types of dormitories on campuses now where people can basically segregate among people that they like the most. So maybe you don't really have to get along with people these days.
I guess. Pretty amazing. But it went viral, so people are having kind of a little bit of a chuckle over that. and beware. Beware of the call. You never had any roommates like that, right?
No.
Not you want to admit
no.
to?
No, just a little bit of door slamming here and there when I was already asleep, but no one crazy. No psychopaths.
Nothing too out of the ordinary. Yeah, very interesting. The Key of David program is coming up here in a little bit on KPCG. One of the programs today is on how not to be deceived. Really great program from a few years back, but a timeless topic. Very important to understand how not to be deceived because deception is the flavor of the day around the media and so forth. All kinds of things. Going on, and a lot of it deceptive. So make sure you listen to this program. Really important topic. How not to be deceived, coming up here in a bit on KPCG. And you can also find the video online at thetrumpet.com as well. Trumpet Daily Radio Show today with your host, Stephen Fleury from Edstone, England. It's a great program today. Great, 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 great program. They're always good programs, but this one in particular. I just love it when he goes and he gets sound bites of politicians saying things that contradict what they're saying now. I mean, it's their own words. They're trapped in their own lies, and it's just tons of it on today's program. It's great. Talking about, of course, Hillary Clinton's ill, obviously, or something's going on. By the way, I saw one of the funniest headlines yesterday. They're trying to make it out like she was okay or something, and they said, oh, for somebody that's supposedly been dying for 30 years, she's doing pretty good. I'm like, she's been dying for 30 years?
That's news to everyone,
well,
too.
And even if you, let's say, were healthy 30 years ago, that's a long time. I mean, what if you're 60, you know? Well, 30 years later, you're 90. I mean, things change over the course of 30 years. Just a bizarre. I mean, who writes this stuff? Same girl that wrote that email, I think.
Someone who's just lacking in much common sense.
It's hard to spin. It's hard to keep spinning and spinning. But anyway, so she's ill, obviously, to some extent. And so President Obama has been campaigning for her yesterday. He campaigned quite a bit. And he came out and he really went after Donald Trump for his supposed relationship with Russia and Vladimir Putin. And, you know, oh, this is, you know, we can't allow this. Oh, but wait a second. It seems like something else happened years ago over and over again, which is that they said the same stuff about Russia. They went to Russia, and they went with the famous reset button with the wrong word on it. And everyone remembers the Mike incident where he's like, wait till I get into power, you know, again, and things will go a certain way. And all these examples, so many of them played on the Trump A Daily Radio Show, where President Obama, in his own words, is doing the exact same thing and more that he's accusing Donald Trump of doing now. And it's like anybody could go find that stuff. It's out there. But yet the media is not in any way going to do that because they're on the company dole, so to speak.
They are. Truckloads of hypocrisy there. And also I saw a headline that said he mentioned himself 137 times while promoting Hillary Clinton. He mentioned himself. So just epic narcissism at the same time.
Yeah, I saw one little clip of it, and he was sort of kind of praising Hillary, but then he had to throw in the fact that he beat her in the election.
Of course.
He had to, like, get that in there, like, as an aside. Like, oh, she's a tough campaigner. You know, but I beat her. So
so not that great.
Not that great, but not as great as me, but she's pretty good. So anyway, it's a really, really good show. Make sure you listen for it because, again, it's their own stuff. It's what they said. It's not even reading quotes. It's actually playing the audio of them saying things that now, a couple years later, they act like, you know, they're accusing the other side of. What are you going to say about it? It is what it is.
Yeah, I saw another thing where a bunch of people recently, they had this headline that Donald Trump had this interview on Russian television, and they're like, oh, well, he must be collaborating with the Russians. And they didn't mention that it was with Larry King, who had been on CNN for like 25 years before that.
Right.
A little bit different from being on a propaganda network when you're actually talking to Larry King.
Yeah, it's amazing. There's an article here today that kind of ties in with that a little bit. It's from the New York Post. It says, Hillary collapse coverage reveals absurdity of biased media. And the New York Post, I don't know, they've got some bizarre things in their paper as well. But they do hit on some stuff from time to time. And I don't know if they're just going after their rivals or what. But in any event, they do hit on some things. And they say, of course, it would be foolish to believe we know the full truth about the Hillary Clinton thing now. Allergies don't usually cause pneumonia, and pneumonia doesn't usually cause otherwise healthy people to collapse on the street. There's probably much more to the story. And, you know, I'm no doctor, but at the same time, I think a lot of people agree with that. You know, all these problems, and it's allergies, no, it's pollen, it's what? I know people with allergies are not falling down every day. I mean, what do they think? What do they take us for?
And they're not having public mini seizures. She's had a lot of those just while talking to the media or giving some sort of a speech.
So this article continues here. It says, but neither should we be foolish enough to believe the Washington Post, New York Times, and others will report the full story in a straightforward fashion. They soon will suffer their own amnesia about how Clinton humiliated them and jump back into the tank for her. He's referring to how they keep coming to her aid, and then she keeps either getting caught lying or something and making them look ridiculous.
Exactly.
But they just keep going along with it because it's all part of the same system, of course. He says that process already has started, and the protective circle around her will draw closer as the election does. As she goes, they go. As she goes, they go. And so, yeah, we've already seen it with that ridiculous, like, oh, yeah, what about Donald Trump? How's his health? What? Never mind that for a second. What about the person that's actually like collapsing constantly? Let's take a look at that for a minute.
It's totally fine to criticize Donald Trump's or question his health if he actually has shown any signs of poor health, but he really hasn't. He actually has incredible stamina. We've talked about that before as well, where he's traveling across the country and holding multiple events every single day, pretty much. So he's holding up pretty well. You can't really do much to criticize him in that area.
And they're having such a hard time in the media and in the left because all the things they want to accuse him of, they're guilty of it 10 times more. And he may have been, you know, he may have had some inappropriate financial dealings. Probably has. I don't know. But the other side doesn't. I mean, come on. It's just, and that's where it always gets to be just kind of a farce. And that's why you have to have opinion pieces, because you can't talk about facts.
No.
Because they're so inconvenient. but anyway, this guy here in the New York Post, he finishes by saying, but remember the little video, the one that of Hillary Clinton collapsing. He says, it is a hinge of hope. It shows the power of simple facts and the value of media when they're actually telling the truth. And, you know, if that video hadn't gotten out, or somebody hadn't shot it, we wouldn't know a thing about it. You wouldn't know a thing about it. Somebody might say, like, oh, yeah, she didn't feel well and went home or something. But because somebody caught it, it changes everything. at least, you know, as far as the story goes right now. So that's kind of the world in which we live. And it's interesting because people love those videos. The media loves them when they catch something that fits their narrative. But sometimes it catches something that doesn't fit their narrative. Then that's an inconvenient problem for them.
Pretty big bias. I wonder how they feel about themselves when they know their whole job is to be objective and they're just failing miserably every single day, pretty much taking orders from the radical left in power of this country right now and just following the storylines, plugging their ears and closing their eyes to every bit of truth and fact that comes before their desk because they can't report on that stuff.
Yeah, you've got to pull a Ben Rhodes and be a fiction author and be a good one, even though I don't know that he is, but people have gone along with it for some reason. You're listening to Trumpet Radio Live here on 101.3 KPCG. Online, we're at kpcg.fm, live link at thetrumpet.com. And if you'd like to follow us on Twitter, you can do that at kpcgfm. Email us any questions, comments, or anything else to comments at kpcg.fm. I'm Dwight Falk and Grant Turgeon here today. And if you don't get a chance to listen to the whole show and you're thinking, boy, I really want to, and I know that's what you think, you should check out the podcast. You can download those at kpcg.fm, and that way you don't miss out on any of the content of this program or any of the other programs here on KPCG. This is an interesting little blurb I saw here, and I think it's worth talking about just for getting some perspective. Just, you know, there's a lot of people in the country right now that are very much into the victimhood ideology. Everybody's against me and everybody did me wrong and everybody owes me everything. So it's good to look back in history sometimes and realize what some people actually went through to get a little perspective here. This is a gentleman. His name is Jack Eisenberg, and he was in part of one of those terrible death marches at World War II. They were all over the place, but particularly in Europe there. He was one of 60 people out of 600 who survived the 100-mile death march from the Colts Castle to the Fahrenstadt concentration camp. He was 16 years old at the time, and he was already starving. He marched for a week with no food. No food. He marched for a week. Those alongside him were so hungry they were eating grass. When they stopped to spend the night at a factory, he found one single pea, and he wanted to boil it over a fire they had started, but he was afraid that somebody was going to steal it from him. One pea. He cut it into four pieces to make it last longer. It was the only food he had for the entire march. You're going to march 100 miles, and you're going to have one pea. He cut it into four pieces so he could have some. He made it, and he knew he was dying, but at that point he no longer cared. Soviet forces liberated the camp days later, and then he was taken to Britain as part of a resettlement program, and he was able to recover. He was one of the war's orphans. That happened. Those things happen to a lot of people. It's good to stop and just look at that. There was a write-up today about some of those stories. And I thought, well, you know what? For everybody that's upset about everything, think about marching 100 miles and eating one pea after you've already been starving. It changes the perspective a little bit.
Yeah, that's extremely sobering. I never had heard that before, but that's something that so many people throughout history have gone through. And now pretty much we'd say, oh, this person looked at me in a way I didn't like, or this person called me a name. And it's like we're back to being children and getting upset at each other on the playground. I mean, that's how can we really say that racism is alive and well in this country when they're obviously allowed to speak out about it? They can speak about it all they want to, and there are no repercussions for it. If there was a huge problem with inequality and injustice here, then people with opposing views would be shut down. I mean, look at some place like Russia.
Yeah, for sure. So anyway, that's why it's important to look at a little bit of history. It changes our perspective. And probably that's why a lot of universities shy away from some history, because then you get caught in the present. And I think that's a really good point you made about being like children, because I think we've probably all had it in our lives when we've been little kids and you just, you know, you're just getting out of pocket, I guess, as they would say, a little out of orbit, and you're getting whatever, upset about things. And then if you've got a good parent that comes along and gives you a little discipline, it changes your perspective very quickly. Like, oh, that didn't matter. Okay, now we're back on Earth. And, you know, when you're a little kid, that's normal, because little kids act that way and they need to be brought in line. But adults are acting that way now. And that's that, you know, on and on and on. You can go to almost any website today, especially ones that are liberal, which are most of them, and find opinion pieces about how, oh, you know, people are just oppressed and they can't believe how hard things are and everybody owes them. And you ever had to walk 100 miles and eat one pea? I haven't. Maybe change the perspective just a touch.
Yeah, there's people living in the Middle East who live in bomb shelters because every single day their whole neighborhood's getting shelled. How about living in a bomb shelter for 7 years? I read a book about someone who did that recently, and that was all they had. They had a bomb shelter that would flood, and it would get infested with all this disgusting mold. They all got lice, but they couldn't really go out because there were snipers always waiting for them to come out. And you know why? Because they were Christians.
Yeah.
The whole reason was because they were Christians. So if people are going to be so upset today in America, just try to think about situations like that.
Yeah, some of that history it's really important. It gives some perspective. And whatever's bugging us that day, you can think, well, it's not that big of a deal. I have dinner tonight.
Yeah.
It's not that big of a deal. Here's a really interesting write-up you've got for us, Grant. This is it's called Generation Jihad. Massive European civil war predicted by scholar of Islam who says jobless young Muslims are increasingly turning to radical groups. And this French professor has said the situation in Europe could develop into a civil war.
That just fits in perfectly with what we know is going to happen based on Bible prophecy as well. A civil war in Europe. Not quite in Europe, but it is going to involve Europe, and it's going to involve crushing radical Islam forever. So it's interesting that a scholar who has studied this religion can just see people, young people especially, getting upset and joining this radical group, which they call Jihad Generation. I don't think it's quite accurate to just say it's because they're jobless when the religion actively encourages being a jihadist. But obviously joblessness, a lot of free time on your hands can turn you to something like that as well. This professor, he talks about how the terror groups or Jihad Generation, their aim is to incite hatred towards Muslims from the rest of the society. Because once all Muslims are singled out for what a few are doing to kill others, then all Muslims will be they'll feel alienated based on people being upset with terrorists and all Muslims. So then those Muslims who feel alienated would then go on and try to commit terrorist acts as well. And that could enter Europe into a full-blown civil war, which, again, we know it's not quite accurate, but he can see signs for something like that happening.
Yeah, tensions are definitely building over there. There's a lot going on. It's talked about somewhat today on the Trumpet Hour as well with Joel Hilliker. You can listen for that here on KPCG as well. And, yeah, there is continual pressure there. There's this push in Europe from radical Islam. And again, eventually everybody kind of gets lumped in. You know, if there's enough attacks, if there's enough things, no matter how much people want to say, well, it's not every Muslim. Well, people at some point, people don't care anymore, whether that's accurate or not. They don't care anymore because that's what they see, and that's their fear. And so it's interesting because the more people try to talk about everyone, you know, having this inclusive group and everybody coming in, the more it really fractures and separates along racial lines, whether it's in Europe, whether it's in the United States, anywhere, because the more people talk about it and they get upset about things, it starts to break down between this race versus this race, this religion versus this religion. And that's really what we've seen throughout history. As much as people don't want to think we're beyond that, it always goes back to that. And then it ends up being fights like this guy's talking about here in Europe.
Yeah, it's extremely dangerous to see what's happening over there, because a lot of Muslims are getting into these jihad groups from a young age. And why would that be? Well, there is this man has studied Islamic society and history. He knows about their book, the Quran, and how that book says, you know, all the later verses that the Prophet Muhammad wrote about violence actually cancel out the earlier verses he wrote about peace. So if you're a Muslim and you know your own book, you would actually agree with jihad in general. He knows this, and he can see that these terrorist maniacs hate Europe, and they want to build an Islamic society from the ashes once they destroy Europe. And the same thing goes for the rest of the world. And not only for non-Muslims, but for Muslims who are less extreme. They want to destroy those people as well.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's the goal of every group, right? It's to dominate the world. It's to rule the world. And we're kind of living in a daydream if we think that people that are of that mindset are going to want to just get along and just, oh, we can all be together and you can have your idea and I'll have my idea and we'll just... Where do we see that working anywhere in the world? The United States has probably been the closest over the years, but that's fracturing at the seams in every which way. So if you lump people together that have different outlooks, different ideologies, different thinking, inevitably there's conflict. I can't think of a time when there hasn't been.
Exactly. It's scary to look at history and then realize that the same things are happening today. This article mentions how the French prime minister said there are 15,000 radicalized people on a police watch list just in France. So 15,000 people who they are afraid will commit a terrorist action. And we've also seen how in Belgium there were neighborhoods harboring terrorists for months, and none of the so-called moderate Muslims ever turned those terrorists into the authorities. So this is why people do get upset with all Muslims, because they don't snitch on their own people. That's another issue there.
Well, and that's the really difficult thing. That's the difficult spot that Europe's in, really a lot of nations, but Europe in particular, because they do know that, like you said, there's 15,000, you said, on these watch lists. But what do? Do you go round them up? They really can't, or they don't. And then so it's just a matter of time when there is an attack, usually. We've seen this recently. And then they say, well, yeah, they've been on a watch list. So the public is, well, why didn't you do something about it? But from the government's perspective, well, what do we do?
Mm-hmm.
Do we just go round up all of these people? And you know that 15,000 would grow because, you know, they'd find out more and more. Or even if there would be accusations. So at some point, you just start rounding up a lot of people. What do you do with them? That's a tough spot for the government to be in, but at some point they have to address the issue. And we're just in that weird space in between where Angela Merkel certainly doesn't want to do anything about it, but that pressure is there to eventually do something about it. So it's a tough spot for the government, I feel for them, because what do you become if you start rounding up masses of people and putting them somewhere? I mean, it's like the Nazis, right? I mean, but can you just let them just roam and cause you problems? It's a real conundrum.
Yeah, it seems like there's not really a great solution for it. France has tried basically searches without warrants, where they just kick the door down if they suspect somebody and they go through the person's things. But, you know, how does that person feel when he's not actually guilty of plotting a terrorist act? He thinks that his own government hates him now. And who knows? Maybe that could even turn him to a group like that. So there is a fine line there where you want to bust the criminals, but you don't want to pick the wrong person to search, because what if they get upset and they turn to the same, lifestyle, that same radical path to killing a bunch of people?
And they might not even find anything, but that doesn't mean that they were not involved. Like the guy in Nice with the truck, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't know if he had anything in its place or not. He may have, but again, the point is the weapon he chose to use was a vehicle, right? It wasn't something that would be apparent.
That wouldn't take something like mapping out a plan. If you could just jump in a truck one day, you know, it doesn't take a map. It doesn't take a weapon that they can find in your apartment. It's just a matter of, does this guy want to jump in this armored truck and drive it through the street and kill hundreds of people?
Yeah, it's a really tough situation there. Does this professor have any silver lining? Does he see any solution, or he just says there's trouble on the horizon?
He doesn't have much of a solution at all, because really the Muslims have flooded in by the millions across the entire continent. So how can they extract every Muslim now? I mean, technically you could, but so many people would be against that. The thing is, there are two different viewpoints of the world, and the Islamic view is totally contrary to Western values, as you could call them. So it's not too productive to have those two groups together, though.
No, it's not. And you can think about it from, say, the other side. You know, what if the Europeans just started flooding into the Middle East? Now, there's no reason to. They probably wouldn't want to. Unless they flooded in there with the mindset to take over or something. I mean, with the locals like that, I'm sure they wouldn't, you know.
It seems more understandable to people that way, though. It's like, well,
yeah,
of course the Muslims shouldn't have to have all the Europeans come in. Okay, well, why is it the other way around where, you know, we're expected to just have unlimited immigration, both to Europe and to America for some reason? There's really a double standard there as well.
Yeah, interesting write-up here. It's from The Sun. Generation Jihad, massive European civil war predicted by a scholar of Islam who says jobless young Muslims are increasingly turning to radical groups. But of course, even with that headline, it's kind of seems like he's saying, well, if you employ them, they'll be fine.
Exactly.
And we've kind of heard that same rhetoric here in the U.S. where if there's people that are committing criminal acts, they say, well, it's because they just want to go to school and learn. And no, they don't. they want to commit crimes. That's why they're doing it.
When you're in that deep and you are even considering killing yourself just so that you can kill others, I don't think getting a job is going to sway you from that type of extreme mindset. Yeah. And it's also frustrating to see here just the kind of pathetic mindset of a lot of leaders in Europe. This French Prime Minister Manuel Valls warned there will be new attacks. There will be innocent victims. This is also my role to tell this truth to the French people. No, your role is to stop the attacks. You should not be defeated and conceding all these attacks are going to happen. Take action and stop them before they start.
Yeah. What kind of a situation would that be? I guess they think, well, if it's just one attack a year, maybe we can survive it. But what if it's one a week, two a week, three? I mean, at some point, it's full-out war, you know. So anyway, we do know, based upon Bible prophecy, that there is going to be a pushback there from Europe. And there's plenty written about that at thetrumpet.com. You can go there and search that. There's a lot to read. The King of the South is a good book. There's lots of books on Europe, the Holy Roman Empire. Talks all about that history and what he can expect to happen in the future. But it is interesting to see that even just university professors are realizing that there's problems here. They should. They're smart people. They should know that there are problems, which there are. Speaking of the media and the way that it puts out reports sometimes that just are not accurate, there's a really interesting story here, and it relates to your health and my health. They say, study details sugar industry's attempt to shape science. They say the sugar industry began funding research. This is from the Associated Press, by the way. The sugar industry began funding research that cast doubt on sugar's role in heart disease, in part by pointing the finger at fat as early as the 1960s, according to an analysis of newly uncovered documents. So the people that made money off of sugar were worried that the information would get out there that it can cause heart disease and other problems. So they said, let's do a little misdirection here. Let's blame fat for it. Not that certain types of fat wouldn't be good, obviously, but or too much of it wouldn't be good. But again, they were just trying to misdirect the public. It just reminds me of the headlines today. You know, never mind this. Look over here. It says the analysis published Monday is based on correspondence between a sugar trade group and researchers at Harvard University and is the latest example showing how food and beverage makers attempt to shape public understanding of nutrition. So they knew that let's just get somebody that people will trust, which would be Harvard, and we'll get them to say that fat's bad for you and causes heart disease, and then no one will be looking at us. And they paid them to do it. And, you know, you look at this and I think, well, how is this different from, like, let's say a Hitler? I mean, in order to make money, you lied to people and probably are somewhat responsible for the deaths of a lot of people and the disease of a lot of people because you fooled them. You lied to them about the effects that sugar was having on their bodies.
Yeah, how do we ever even believe science anymore when even an institution like that can be bought? We've seen it already in politics and even other parts of science where pretty much there's a lot of pressure to believe evolution. Really, some of these fields are supposed to be completely objective and they're supposed to do their job for the benefit of humanity. And science especially, you would think, would be on the people's side. But apparently not if enough money is involved.
Well, and again, if you think about it, if somebody were to have stood up at some point here in this process and said, I don't agree with that, you know what they would say? Oh, what are you, from Harvard? you mean to tell me you're smarter than all these Harvard guys, the ones that I'm paying off?
Right.
Whoops, I didn't mean to say that part. but that's the same thing you'd hear today if you were to question anything. Now, sometimes a person might question it and be wrong, and then they should be able to say, well, here are the facts and whatever. But in a lot of cases, the response is just, well, you're not as smart as these guys.
You're not a scientist, so you could never know. Yeah.
It says in 1964, the group, now known as the Sugar Association, this sounds funny, internally discussed a campaign to address negative attitudes towards sugar after studies began emerging linking sugar with heart disease, according to documents dug up from public archives, hidden away there in the public archives. They didn't put it in the tent, apparently, that keeps all the secrets. The harkening back to an earlier program. The following year, the group approved what's called Project 226, which entailed paying Harvard researchers today's equivalent to $48,900. That's pretty cheap. Sugar's got more money than that. For an article reviewing the scientific literature, supplying materials they wanted reviewed, and receiving drafts of the article. The resulting article published in 1967 concluded that there was no doubt that reducing cholesterol and saturated fat was the only dietary intervention needed to prevent heart disease. Just keep eating that sugar, but stay away from that fat. The researchers overstated the consistency of the literature on fat and cholesterol while downplaying studies on sugar, according to the analysis, all for the price of $48,000.
That's pretty sad, because I thought the price would be in the millions at least. But apparently less than $50,000 is enough to sway someone to basically indirectly kill a lot of people who didn't know that they were at risk of heart disease.
$48,900 and a lifetime supply of Kool-Aid. They said, they wrote here, let me assure you, this is quite what we had in mind, and we look forward to its appearance in print. That's what they were saying. That was an employee of the sugar industry group to one of the authors. This is perfect. This is just what we were looking for. Tell everybody fat's bad for you. If you stop having fat, no problems with your heart, but sugar will be great. And of course, what do we have in this country today? Diabetes, cancer, what else? Those are the big ones, I guess.
Well, just obesity in general. Probably the most obese nation in the world by far. I don't think anyone else is even really that close.
If you were to believe kind of the basic thinking that has been out there and still kind of is, everyone in this country that's overweight, it's because they eat eggs, right? Oh, man, we're just glutton. We can't stay away from eggs. So just eat egg whites and then drink like 7 Gatorades and you'll be fine. Is anybody getting obese on eggs? I don't think so. Yeah, they just can't stay away from the milk. They're just huge over there. I mean, does anyone think that's true? No. Now, I know they go through some processes that actually strip out a lot of the nutrients in some of those things. But again, it's just this crazy thought that, and again, they've revealed it here, that it was a complete farce. It was a lie, just so they could sell more sugar to people. And now we have diabetes, cancers, et cetera, most of which are fed from sugar, too much sugar.
Well, apparently, the abundance of lying we're seeing today is not a new phenomenon. Even back 50 years ago, people lied all the time. So it just shows you humans are basically fundamentally the same, and anytime a lie is convenient, it will probably be told by the majority of people.
In a statement after being busted here, the Sugar Association said it should have exercised greater transparency in all of its research activities.
Oh, that word.
In other
transparency.
Words, we probably shouldn't have lied to everybody. We shouldn't have paid somebody off with a bribe. But that funding disclosures were not the norm when the review was published. The group also questioned the person that's doing this study into this continued attempts to reframe historical occurrences. Okay. To play into the current public sentiment against sugar. I don't think anyone's like mad at sugar. I think people like sugar. It's just the overabundance of it and the refined and the them sticking it in every basic thing that you could consume these days for profit, to make money.
At least let people know how bad it is, because if you're going to produce all these different products, people can enjoy them, but they probably would have a lot less if they knew that heart disease was a real possibility.
Absolutely. Companies, they say, including Coca-Cola and Kellogg's, as well as groups for agricultural products, regularly fund studies that become part of scientific literature. So they're paying for it. And then they cite that. Other researchers cite it. And then they pass it on for press releases. So you can sit there and say to somebody, well, I'm an expert in this because I read this other thing. But that thing was funded by the, you know, some group that has a vested interest in the report going one way as opposed to the other.
So how many reports from science have been distorted by even maybe just one article? If a bunch of other reports cited that article, then really the public has been misled in a huge way.
Yeah, and that it, you see the same thing happen in the legal system, where somebody will make a ruling and then everyone points back to that ruling.
For precedent,
yeah,
right.
Where maybe it's right, but maybe it's not. And the big thing that's missing is truth. Well, what's the truth? I don't care what that guy said about it. What's the truth of the matter? Or does that even matter anymore?
Yeah.
You know, the fruits are apparent. We have a health crisis in this country, and in many, many ways. And so all you have to do is watch the nightly news when most of the older people are watching because of all the advertisements they put on there for them. They got to take 500 pills a day just to stay alive.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently, from what they advertise. But it'll be a good life because they're always walking like in sunshine and, you know, riding in boats and things.
In the bathtub on the top of the hill.
Yeah, you know, common things we all do every day. But again, why are those medications out there? Well, in a lot of cases, because they're making money.
Mm-hmm.
And why does the doctor tell you might need it? I always find that interesting in those commercials where they say, ask your doctor. Well, if it's that big of a deal, shouldn't he be telling me? Why do I have to ask him? He's the expert.
Right.
He should be telling me I need to take this, you know, pill I can't pronounce. So, but again, it's because they're selling it, and the sugar industry has done the same thing. So this is a really interesting write-up. I'd read the whole thing if you could. It's at the Associated Press. Study details sugar industry attempt to shape science. That's junk science right there.
Junk food science.
Junk food science. That should be a new show. Junk food science. Talk about how, there's a lot you could talk about there, I guess.
Endless programming.
Endless programming. So anyway, pretty interesting write-up, I thought. Lots of interesting things going on today, and thanks for joining us here to discuss some of them on Trumpet Radio Live. The Key of David program's coming up in a little bit. Also, the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. Exceptionally good program today. Make sure you listen for that, exposing some of the stuff going on right now in the political season here in the U.S. And also the Trumpet Hour Wednesday edition is coming your way as well. And also, if you get a chance, stop by and visit armstrongauditorium.org. There's a concert coming up here on Thursday, Step Crew, and it's going to be a really great show. So, and that's the truth. That's the truth of it. No manipulation there.
Every single person who goes to that can back up that claim.
Yep, and there will be... a great show there. So I think there might be a few tickets left, though they are selling quickly. So check that out, armstrongauditorium.org. Thanks for joining us on Trumpet Radio Live today. For myself, Dwight Falk, and Grant Turgeon, have a great rest of your Wednesday. We'll see you back here tomorrow.
Listening to Trumpet Radio 101.3 KPCG.